Welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulk. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Joining us from Vancouver is the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, what draws you to the west coast of Canada in the middle of January?
I'm here every January, Rob. This is the annual Cambridge House Conference. Starts tomorrow for 2 days, and that's followed in a week or so by the Vancouver Roundup, which is mainly a geology convention.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think BNN's going to have a presence at that.
Okay, good stuff. And I understand you're also scheduled in for an interview on BNN.
I am. I'll be on the commodity show for 2 segments this coming Friday with Andy Bell.
Okay, look forward to seeing that segment. Mickey, we want to focus on iodine for this program. You mentioned in our last interview that iodine is the last halogen on the periodic table of any consequence. I believe it was discovered in the early 1800s. Fill us in on some of the history of iodine, Mickey, and its characteristics.
Well, you're quite right. Discovered in 1811, really by accident during a production of sodium nitrate saltpeter for gunpowder. The guy put in a little bit too much sulfuric acid and saw iodine vapor, so that's where it comes from. The word iodine is a derivative of the Greek word for purple, and that's because, as most people probably know, it forms a brilliant purple gas.
Mm-hmm.
At room temperature, it's a blue-black solid, but it sublimates, so it's not very stable as these halogens tend to be. Rarer 60th in the Earth's crust, and interestingly enough, it's more abundant in the oceans at 50 parts per billion versus rocks and soils at 40.
Now, when you mentioned that we would be focusing on iodine for this program, the first thing I thought of is when you're cut or you suffer a rather nasty scrape, you put some iodine on there on the wound to prevent infection. I remember my mother doing this to me a number of times when I was a kid, and boy, does it sting, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and that's called tincture of iodine, and there's a medical product that's used quite often, and that's betadine for wounds. Most of its applications are biological because it is essential for all life, although in very trace amounts, especially in animals. It's used by the thyroid gland as hormones to regulate metabolism, so it's essential for all life on the planet.
Any idea how much iodine is used globally every year, Mickey?
It's fairly hard to get that number because the USGS withholds all U.S. production, but I kind of work my way in the back door. It's a small amount, something on the order of 32,000 tons per year. Most of that still comes from the Atacama Desert of Chile, produced as a byproduct of caliche from mainly sodium nitrate production.
Mm-hmm.
From what I could gather, Japan comes in second at about 21%. The U.S. is much below that. I saw some numbers about 5%. Those latter two countries produce from oil and gas brines.
And I understand that after World War II, Mickey, the U.S. government started stockpiling iodine for defense applications. By the late 60s, though, the government decided that, the early 90s, rather, Congress decided that stockpiling of iodine was not necessary. So, obviously, that stockpile has dwindled down to absolutely nothing. Is that correct?
Well, I'm unaware of that, to tell you the truth, but it makes sense. There were many commodities, especially metals, that were stockpiled after World War II. With the demise of the Soviet Union, the U.S. government, both the executive and legislative branches, decided during the Clinton administration that those were inventories that we did not need, so stockpiles have been sold off in almost all commodities.
And I guess really the thinking being in stockpiling this stuff was that potassium iodine has been used to help offset, I guess, the effects of radiation. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's exactly right. And the applications for the element are almost all biological because it's necessary for animal life to function properly. It's used in as food additives, in both for humans and animals.
Mm-hmm.
It has some use for catalysts with the production of acetic acid, which is an organic acid, and also used in producing rubber for tires. Its main use, again, is the topical antiseptics and disinfectants that we mentioned before, and also disinfectants mm-hmm. of water supplies, especially things like dairies and food plants and hospitals and labs. And then, as you've alluded to, it's got nuclear applications, used in nuclear medicine, both for cancer treatments and mm-hmm. X-ray scans. We probably should ask Walter White about this, but it is used in illicit methamphetamine production, and also used in LCDs. So it has a variety of uses, but they're not very, all in all, not a large tonnage. 26,000 tons a year is minuscule for most commodities.
Okay, we should fill in the listening audience, Mickey, just in case they are not aware just who Walter White is. Okay.
Walter White, we made mention of that last week, is the star, or the character that is the star of the hit show filmed in Albuquerque called Breaking Bad.
Right. Now, you mentioned nuclear facilities and, offsetting the impact of radiation. Don't know if you know this, Mickey, but as the crow flies, my house here just outside of Toronto is located about 5 kilometers or so from the Pickering Nuclear Plant, which is the oldest facility, nuclear power facility, I believe, in the country. And every year I get a form from the schools. I have to check off a box that if there is an accident at that plant, the school is allowed to give my kids, I forget the name of it, but it's an iodine pill, basically, to be...
All right.
You know.
Yeah, that's potassium iodide.
Right.
So we should probably review this a little bit for our listeners. There are 37 isotopes of the element, only one of which is stable, and that's iodine-127, but that constitutes almost all the naturally occurring supply. There's three specific radioactive isotopes that have applications in nuclear medicine. One of those has applications is iodine-131. It's got a very short half-life, and it emits a beta particle. So, and it's a common product of nuclear fission.
Mm-hmm.
In very small amounts, it's very highly carcinogenic because it will be taken up preferentially by the thyroid gland.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's any sort of nuclear accident, or in the past when you and I grew up, there were atomic bombs exploded in the atmosphere, the way to prevent these thyroid cancers is to have people take potassium iodide pills with naturally occurring iodine in them,
mm-hmm.
and that then prevents the thyroid gland from taking up the nasty iodine-131.
Right. And iodine also necessary, Mickey, in the developing a pretty good mind.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called an iodine deficiency, and if you have an iodine deficiency, there's a greater chance that you're going to be a little bit behind in your intelligence, I guess, is the bottom line. I've seen that iodine deficiency can lower an IQ score on average by 10 to 15 points. So this is something that our body needs.
Well, absolutely. It's essential for thyroid hormones. And so it's estimated that 2 billion people in the world still have an iodine deficiency. That's greater than 1/4 of the world's population.
Mm-hmm.
In developed countries, that's mitigated and has been for quite some time by putting potassium iodide in ordinary table salt. The natural sources of iodine are basically seafood and kelp. So historically, areas that are inland and mountainous, people can have very bad iodine deficiencies, and it leads to goiters
mm-hmm.
and fatigue and retardation, which you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The word cretin is derived from people historically who have had iodine deficiencies and don't grow properly and have mental retardation.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things, weight gain and depression. And we still see problems with iodine deficiency in a large part of the world, specifically in Central and Northern Asia, Central Africa, India, China, inland areas of India and China, and Paraguay, which is a landlocked country, so Bolivia. So you see this in areas where there are iodine-deficient soils and no access to seafood or kelp or things like that would supply iodine to the diet.
Okay, and we often bring up the issue of price for various elements or whatever that we're discussing. What about iodine prices? How have they moved recently?
Well, they've moved recently upward, and a lot of that had to do with Fukushima, because not only when Fukushima happened was there a rush for people all over the world, which made no sense, to take potassium iodine tablets. But this was also an area which produces a significant amount of the world's iodine. So those plants, I think something six plants were offline for a period of time in northern Japan. So as a result, prices increased in 2011. It is not possible yet to get all the data we need for 2012, but I think they've stabilized. What we generally see is something on the order of about $20 per kilogram for iodine.
Okay, in wrapping up, Mickey, is there an investable angle to what we've been discussing here at all? It doesn't sound like there is, but what do you think?
Well, I'd say that you nailed that one on the head. No, there isn't. You know, you've got some couple of oil fields in Oklahoma, much like the bromine industry we talked about last time. There's an oil field or a gas field in Montana, gas brines in Japan. So these are chemical processing plants that are produce a variety of products from rich oil field brines. And no, there is no, that I can tell, any space that for investment in this. In fact, the three plants in Oklahoma in the U.S. are all owned by Japanese. So Toyota owns one of them, in fact.
Okay, and you're not going to buy a Toyota stock because it owns a plant that makes iodine.
<so.
laughs> No, indeed. All right, well, let's wrap it up there. Mickey, we're going to do it, of course, all over again in a couple of weeks from now. You got a topic in mind?
Oh, yeah. We're going to go back to something we visited in the past, and that's platinum. The platinum-gold ratio has been over 1 recently. There's a platinum shortage, so we need to address the supply-demand fundamentals of platinum once again.
Yeah.
There's been some severe supply disruptions over the last year or so, and it's led finally to a very robust platinum market.
Yeah, that's a real interesting story, Mickey, and we'll flesh that one out in a couple of weeks from now. Thanks very much for this.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulte, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.